Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 121st. I did it right this time because I kept saying the last episode was the 121st. However, this one is. This is the Mod State Podcast, and we're back. My friend, how are you?
I'm good, and there's only one number that's important to remember. We're number one, baby!
yeah, that's it.
Roll with that.
That's all that matters. All right, so this podcast, we're going to touch on just briefly because it really hasn't been discussed that much. However, in some conservative circles, because it's not really an issue, I think, to lefties or progressives, is
you
this
on Reddit though?
Reddit. So this is where this very spawned from. Left. How dare I let Reddit be the catalyst to my?
Well, my point is that's a very left leaning joint.
It is, but there's a lot of right leaning subs there. I guess there's a sub for everybody. So
there's a troll for all seasons.
There is a troll for all seasons. So in this case, this is the Alfie Evans case in part of the NHS healthcare system. In Great Britain, this little boy was actually had a really unfortunate case where he had a neurological or degenerative neurological disorder, which actually wasn't firmly diagnosed. It was just a degenerative disorder. Of course, over time, sadly, there was no cure. It became terminal, and just recently, this little boy has passed away. So. The reason I bring this up is because I think there's this disconnect. And we just talked about universal programs on our last podcast when we were talking about New Zealand. So let me just broadly frame this issue that has been presented. So on the subreddits, the conservative subreddits, there's a lot of memes that are going around of Jimmy Kimmel, who, of course, advocated for universal healthcare because his child had a congenital, or his motivation for advocating for universal healthcare was because of his child's congenital heart defect. It's a major surgery. However, a lot of congenital heart defects are fixable, need some sort of surgery down the road, but you can have a good quality of life and live if you have it fixed. However, this is a pediatric open heart surgery. This does not come at a very it's not a sales price. It is not a cheap procedure. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars, especially over time. So the meme was, Jimmy Kimmel advocates for universal healthcare when his child needs open heart surgery. The second part of the meme is Jimmy Kimmel, and the meme says, Jimmy Kimmel silent when socialized medicine kills Alfie Evans. And unfortunately, and I think you'll agree here, that there's a bit of a non-starter in this argument. However, this is the argument that's being crafted by critics of universal healthcare. So I proposed the question. I said, listen, what's the overall issue here? I don't think the issue is that there's these quote-unquote death panels with socialized medicine, because quite frankly, your insurance company, if you have any sort of insurance in the United States, at some point, based on the treatment model that you have, they're going to say, we're not going to do that. That's not part of what we're going to pay for. Or is the other problem, again, in this case of Alfie Evans, this wasn't a death panel. This was a child that was going down the road of palliative or hospice care. It was a terminal diagnosis, meaning that there wasn't anything else. For 1 year, they held onto this child. And if there was any scientific evidence that showed that they could do something to help this kid, they would have. So is the issue these death panels? No, I don't think that's it. I said, is the issue that essentially the courts in Great Britain said that that the child had to remain at the NHS hospital, the National Health, the National Health Institute a hospital, or was it that the parents didn't have the right, quote unquote, to send the child to America or to Rome, where there was a Vatican-run hospital?
So, right, but part of the misconception here, as I understand it, and the parents are pushing this narrative, but are pushing the whole story.
Yes, they are.
But the misconception, as I understand it, is that there was some magic cure awaiting them in some faraway land if only the nanny stayed in London would let them pursue it.
So that was part of the
there was no cure anywhere.
There was no cure anywhere. I think in the United States there was a potential trial or some sort of trial medication that might
help this child. And how long would that child have suffered?
So this was what the court said. The court said, listen, it's not that we don't want to help this kid. We absolutely want to help this kid. The problem is that we're deciding that
prolonged suffering for a 2% chance that this drug won't, forget curing him, not debilitate him and exacerbate his suffering.
And John, we're not even talking about 2% chance. It's
I was being generous,
that's super generous. I think what the court said is they said, listen, if this child is going to die, there's a let's just say a 98% chance that this child's going to pass away. But even then, I think that the courts would have been in favor. If there's a 2% chance, let's go for it. However, there was
I can't vouch for the UK justice system, but
I can
vouch for here is that this issue, number one, is an awful tragedy for this family. You and I both discussed this. 100%. Second is it's the issue is being manipulated by both sides, in my view, but especially by the right. On the left, this is not justification for universal health care. I'm sorry. There's potential arguments to be made.
No.
This is not one of them. On the right, first and foremost, let this family get it out. Because no matter how many times you would say, well, the family's the one pushing the narrative, let them. It's their child that died.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's not as though they said, hey, there's a cure in Cambodia or there's a cure in Mobile, Alabama, but the meanies in London won't let – that's not the story.
The story is the court. So this is the story. The court said, hey, doctors, you the medical experts, is there a cure for this? No, Your Honor, or no, sir, ma'am, there is not. Okay. So if we go to the United States, is there a reasonable degree of surety that we will find some sort of cure for this child who suffers seizures at any sort of stimulation? No, Your Honor, there is not. This is a terminal illness. Okay, so would there be any sort of benefit of putting this ventilated, trached, or in this case just ventilated, feeding tube, seizing baby on an airplane for 8 hours to New York City for then transportation to the hospital, set up in his room, and then run, given the opportunity for experimental drugs to help ease the suffering potentially of this child? The physicians would say, I would advise against putting this child on an airplane for an 8-hour transport trip to the United States. I think it would be in the best interest and comfort for this child to stay here at the hospital if the outcome is no different. I get that the parents say, I should have the right to take my child wherever I want for healthcare. That's great. But again, an insurance company or the NHS system is going to say, well, do you have the money to do that? No, I don't. Okay, well, I don't mean to be the death panel here, but we're going to do what we think is in the best interest, and that's keep this kid comfortable.
Whatever you want to call it, this is not what you want to hear as a parent.
No.
Okay? What you want to hear as a sibling, okay? There are things, and this is tried and you lied for it, life is not fair.
No.
This is a child who didn't do anything wrong. This happened. But all the ink, all the legislation, all the digital media in the world, whatever you want to pass, all the money in the world couldn't have prevented the outcome here.
Exactly. And I am not...
With the central government or a private firm, you want to call it a death panel, okay, I think the most conscionable thing to do here was to keep the child out of pain, largely with analgesic opioid medication, and let the child pass.
Which they were doing... Yeah, and again, I think you agree or hopefully know the place I'm coming from is as a healthcare practitioner of sorts, that has dealt with a lot of death I am not attacking the family. I am not, because I've watched families have to deal with the loss of their loved ones, and there's nothing you can say that's going to make things better. I am not, anything I'm proposing is going to make this easier for them. I'm just saying, for everyone else that uses this as a platform to project some sort of criticism.
First of all, they need to stop.
Yeah, I would say, until you really understand the ins and outs of this, then you really shouldn't be making some sort of judgment call on socialized medicine.
Let them grieve, and then from a macro perspective, look at this. That's what we're talking about here. Yeah. None of us are related to these people. We're not dealing with them on a personal level. They're not even Americans. Okay? And look at this and say, okay,
yeah,
from a policy perspective, what sort of change to the status quo could we bring about that would have changed the outcome? Exactly. The answer is none.
Yes. And honestly, the National Review, which is, I believe, a fairly conservative...
it is.
Yeah. Actually has a really good article about as right wing as you can get about this situation, which I'll post in the show notes. Their actual title is "Judges in the Alfie Evans Case Failed to Convince a Large Part of Humanity," and I think that's more or less about how socialized medicine can work. I tend to disagree with that. However,
this is not a barometer for or against that. You can make arguments for it, and I can. I've made them. You and I've had these debates, and I'm sure we'll have it again. This is not a watershed moment for either side.
No, and at the end of the day, I think it makes a lot of concessions. One of the concessions is that this was going to happen no matter what, where this kid went. They just said, "Listen, it was a failure to not allow their." It was a failure overall to not let this family take their child where they wanted to in order to have this, the end of the child's life.
Cost of the child.
And now I guess I say you're right. I think
hubris.
I don't know. I think in this case, maybe, yeah, you should be able to take your child where you would like to have that child's life end. Or, I mean, but at the end of the day,
okay, I think you ought to have to pay to move your child to suffer in another country.
Yeah, I mean, I
know that sounds really hard. You're thinking it. I'll go ahead and say it.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I would say that any sort of move.
That's a hard thing here.
I mean, if I was dying today here, and I'm just saying, like, legitimately, if I was dying here today, and I for whatever reason wanted to go back to Michigan to die, you know, I'm not expecting anyone to foot that bill to take me there. It would be under my own volition to get there. I mean, it wouldn't be the best circumstances here, and it would be better there. I don't know. I mean, this is a tough conversation for a lot of people that don't want to hear these difficult things. But again, I'm not coming from a place of callousness or I, just like you and I have dealt with.
The question is not, do we care enough to change a problem in the status quo that could have fixed this? The discussion is acknowledging the reality, whether you want to say that crap happens, bad things happen to good people, life's not fair, however you want to put it. There's no policy, there's no modicum of policy change that you can affect that would have changed the outcome.
Yeah.
For anybody to use that, let the family get it out. But for anybody on the circumference of this, to use this to benefit an external policy discussion, to me is morally reprehensible. Yeah. So I mean, that's frankly where I leave it.
Indeed, we'll leave it there because you said it. Policy. Let's talk about policy. We have not talked about the midterm elections for a moment. And I believe we've been pretty good at doing topics for our podcasts. However, I think it's time to touch on some midterm elections and some midterm election strategy. This is obviously a bit lighter than this horrific case that we just talked about. I think I sent you an article that essentially was a poll that was conducted with about 3,000 individuals broadly over the United States. The creator of the poll, or the curator, or the producer, whatever you want to call it, had essentially issued a warning to Democratic leaders that said, hey, we're losing momentum. And essentially was, if we continue, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, the essence was, if we continue to push the Trump narrative, If we continue to say the reason you should get out to vote is because of Trump, we will lose the momentum come November, and we will not take back the positions that we would like or the seats that we would like to take back. And I said, that's sort of interesting. I tend to agree. However, was I off base with that at all?
I don't think so. What? Couple of things. There's common knowledge here, which we can say, okay, common knowledge means we wouldn't be discussing unified government because Donald John Trump would not have won.
Yes.
So with that, though, historically speaking, that critical 4 to 5% of the independent slash swing vote that's really going to matter here, every vote matters, but you know what I'm getting at. What's going to possibly, hence the term swing this, those folks tend to not like unified government. So midterm, they tend to say, hey, we're not comfortable with both the House of Representatives and the Senate, as well as the executive branch being all the same political party.
Yep.
On the other hand, not to a significant degree, Republicans tend to turn out better in voting for the midterms. We saw that. For instance, the Democrats struggled with that. I think the Democrats assumed that Obama was on the ballot, and it cost them.
Yep.
Here, it's unique in a number of ways. Obviously, your tendency is here as the general you running for representative seat, district, whatever, or Senate seat, wherever, if you're a Democrat, is to focus on the boogeyman here. And I'm not saying that to be a smartass. I'm saying, okay, there's an elephant in the room, no pun intended. With that, though, this is the beginning of May.
Yep.
Americans already hate how long campaign seasons go on for here. If that's all you have to say between now and November, the Democratic leading voters are decided. The Republican leading voters
already decided.
Have decided. And that 4 to 5% is going to go, Jesus, all these people have to say is Trump, 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 Trump. And for once, as I told you in precast, I actually agree with Nancy Pelosi here when she extended her look. She's said this before, and you know, impeachment is reserved for high crimes and misdemeanors, but she's extended the argument now saying we need to focus on more than just we dislike Trump, because whether you like it or not, Donald Trump's not on the ballot.
Yeah.
Okay, and people don't go to the polls for midterms. We're talking about, for one thing, they're older voters, and yep. I mean 40, 45 and up, which tends by nature to be more conservative.
Yep.
So bear that in mind. I'm not saying it's not possible for them to vote Democrat. But if all you're coming to them with is Donald Trump, have we learned anything recently that we didn't already really know about President Trump?
Yeah. Well, and I think there's something interesting that you bring up there. You talk about the 4 to 5%. So I don't think that those people will necessarily just be like, ugh, I'm so sick of hearing about Trump, I'm going to vote for Republicans. I think what happens is they might vote for the incumbent. They could. The other thing is they don't show up at all. That would be the other thing. They're just so tired.
That's the big thing. You brought up something big there. I hadn't even discussed that. I think turnout could be depressed because of that.
Yes.
And you got to remember, incumbents tend to win. It's upwards of 3/4 of the time.
Yes.
For a reason, you're going to exacerbate that if all you think back. Think back to 2010. Okay. John Boehner got up, teary-eyed, accepting the speakership and all that. Okay, I love John Boehner, okay, as a man, as a politician, but he did turn on the tears when he saw it befitting.
Indeed.
The Republicans didn't just run on, well, Obama. They focused on whether they're hypocritical for it now or not is irrelevant. They focused on what they saw as an exacerbation, a gross expansion of the federal state, of the spending, of the ultimate progenitor of evil, yeah. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, a president that campaigned on wars, two wars that he was going to end. Iraq were back in, okay, and at the time he had basically expanded the war in Afghanistan so much so that now, I mean, it's even thought of as Obama's war, okay, in political science circles. So, yeah, that was 2010, so we weren't quite back in Iraq yet, but there was a lot going on, though, and the Republicans are going to say they ran a good overall national campaign there. Correct me if I'm wrong, please, but I'm not seeing that kind of platform diversity across the spectrum here. We've only got 9 or 10 elections in a sample size for special elections. And I think
five, six
of those have gone Democrat. But are you seeing a platform diversity at that level?
To add to that as well, let's look at the can we use the Roy Moore case as one of these? So that wasn't really even policy. That was just disliking Roy Moore. That was disliking.
I think that's exceptional.
It is. However, if the sexual scandal hadn't happened, I think Roy Moore would have won. You wouldn't have seen people turn out. So that's that caveat. So the other is, yes, there is not that diverse platform that you're looking for. I think there can be. I think they can absolutely use immigration as one. But again, the midterms
look at the best candidate, the Democrats. I want you to finish the thought, but bear this in mind. This might kind of color this for you and help.
Sure.
Look at the overall through and through best candidate that the Democratic Party, in my opinion, has run. All his bases, age, education, charisma. John Ossoff, I believe was the name, right? In Atlanta?
Atlanta, yeah.
And he lost.
He did.
Why? Because the election came down to a referendum on Donald Trump.
Yeah. So it's an interesting case, because at the end of the day, just like Nancy Pelosi said, Donald Trump is not on the ticket. You are literally, it comes down to policy and who has the better narrative on the policy that will make America greater moving forward. So even if you talk about immigration, it doesn't have to do with Donald Trump. It has to do with the incumbent. It has to do with the two people that are running. So,
well, let's face it, this guy's winning the PR battle right now. Okay, you and I talked about this precast. But love him, hate him, whether you're indifferent, it doesn't matter, okay? Nothing significant. We would know by now, as we've said several times, through the leaks and all that, the dossier. We would know if there was something kapuya.
We'll see. Okay? I don't know. Rudy Giuliani seems to be doing a really good job of.
We'll see.
We will see.
I wouldn't swear by it, obviously. I wouldn't bet your life or anybody that I cared about.
However,
anybody
else
like Trump's life.
I do understand.
It doesn't look like it.
I do understand where you're coming from. Yes.
So
yes.
With that, you know, we're not seeing this smoking gun. So it's going to look like, I think Nancy's thinking, Representative Pelosi is thinking, okay, if we put all our eggs in a basket with no bottom here, there's nothing. It's going to look like we've just demonized him. Suddenly that 30% of the country, you add in some swing voters to go, man, these people are full of shit.
Yeah.
All they've talked about this whole time is Donald Trump, and it's much ado about nothing. Don't estimate the head of his legal team either.
I'm not.
That's Giuliani. But this comes down to, I mean, he's winning the PR battle because he does have a point in that article that you and I discussed. Okay, well, you don't mind sharing things that are negative about me, so why won't you answer the House Republicans in documents? I mean, what do you have to hide?
Yeah, I do think at the end of the day, that you do need to have some sort of policy, some sort of vision, a policy vision moving forward in America that, dare I say, trumps your opponents. Literally is better for a way of moving forward.
Senator Sanders did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bernie Sanders could have won the general election. Would he have gotten anything done? That's a different conversation.
That's a different conversation. That's irrelevant.
But he was bold.
Yes. Yes.
He put forth policy ideas. He made the mistake of attaching the word free when there's no such thing as a free lunch, we know. That was his big PR mistake, was saying free college, all this. But he had a plan.
Yes.
Tell me, you can tell me what Sanders campaigned on. It's easy to tell me. It's on a ball cap what Trump campaigned on.
Yeah.
Name for me a significant issue that Hillary Clinton campaigned on.
Oh, I mean,
aside from breaking the glass ceiling.
Oh, education, I think, jobs. But it wasn't
specific
as
policy.
Oh, she was very policy oriented, but it wasn't as simplistic for the American people as it was as Bernie Sanders, and it wasn't as nuanced and ambiguous as Donald Trump's was. So it was this weird in between, and that glass ceiling wasn't enough for her to push through.
In between does not work in a country of extreme polarization.
It does not. We can all agree who probably the best candidate was. Or qualified, we'll just say qualified. But it doesn't matter because it's irrelevant because it didn't happen. But what I'm saying is we cannot wait. The Democratic Party, I say we, the Democrat, because I'm not Democratic.
We're discussing this from the perspective of hypothetical political consultants.
So
They're throwing away a golden opportunity right now.
Yes, the Democratic Party cannot, absolutely cannot wait for 2020. They have to do it this time. They have to see something.
They can't wait until July.
No.
I'm telling you right now, they wait. If this is still the status quo for how their campaign is going across the ballot, by 4th of July weekend, people are done.
Yeah. I think what keeps a lot of the momentum going right now, and I'm not holding this against liberals or progressives, that's not the point, because I think there is this exhaustion at this point for the things that they see that are wrong. However, the frustration is fueled by Donald Trump, A, and then these random policies that are pushed through at the federal level, and then a lot of little small things at the state level.
Exactly. Two things here. Anybody wanting to go in there and vote against Donald Trump on this ballot is going to be disappointed. His name's not going to be there.
Exactly.
Okay. The other issue is, as I mentioned precast, I could be wrong, but I say again, dollars to donuts. It's not a coincidence. Ryan's out the door. John Boehner, the most successful modern fundraiser in House history, any party, by the way, is now on the board of a cannabis company. Don't let the Republicans squeak in there and take this issue away from you. I've heard them saying, we want to make this a central issue in the campaign. Okay, well, you better think of something else from Donald Trump and don't let the GOP take it.
Could you imagine if free market GOPers came in and said, yeah, we've got a legislation for legalizing marijuana in the United States. It is over.
Well, you could forget about retaking Congress.
The fact that John Boehner is making moves and sits on that board right now is very curious to me.
If that happens, and by the way, Paul Ryan won't have anything to do with it, and just coincidentally, he's gone, so is Trey Gowdy.
Yeah.
The other man against it.
And quite frankly, I don't care. I really don't care who puts that legislation forward. I just think it needs to go forward.
I don't either, but from like a just a
but from a political a, strategist.
Yeah,
yes.
From our perspective, I'm going.
Yes, you just
are y'all really going to let that? Oh, because Steve Scalise, by the way, he and Kevin McCarthy's from a state where it's legal across the board, California, House Majority Leader. Steve Scalise is in favor of it, the very least. He's been quiet about it. Medical legalization.
That's fine.
Don't let the Republicans take this issue, or it's going to be a long night in November.
I agree. Not getting conspiratorial, because I don't think that's the case. I just think it is legitimately...
John Boehner just happened to join that. And remember, he had to wait a little while to go to K Street, most successful fundraiser in House history, who also presided over... Here's his credentials here. He fought President Obama, tooth and nail, brought about the largest spending cuts over a decade in history, to the tune, $2 trillion. It was, again, that's not a lot over 10 years, but still. And he ended earmarks.
Yeah.
Okay, so those credentials on the board of a marijuana firm, don't let that happen, Nancy. You let him school you once before. Don't let it happen again.
It could happen. Either way, I hope – I got my fingers crossed that it happens regardless. But as you said before, political strategy, don't, because then it's done. In fact, 2020 –
GOP knows they're in trouble now.
2020, you're done too. I believe it.
What's their ace in the hole right now? The GOP.
What's
they know they're in trouble.
I mean, why hold back?
So I like that article I sent you the other day from Reuters. Even there are sitting Republicans that are going, maybe we need to review this scheduling. I'm telling you, it's simmering. They're not going to be as outspoken as California Democrats about it.
Yeah, but – I think it's there. We always know that politics is several years behind popular culture, or just culture in general.
Republican politics.
And all it takes is that one day, boom, it happens, and we're like, "Yep, it just caught up. It caught up today." And I don't know who it's gonna be, because I really do believe it's a toss up now. I don't know.
John Boehner shows up with a bottle of Merlot and a carton of Marlboro Lights, and
he's like, "Hey, baby, this is the life, you know."
This is Bigley Donald. This is Tan.
Yep. Oh, God. Well, my friend, we are at a half hour again, and as always, it's a massive pleasure to do this with you. We will have more to come. And more to talk about with the midterms. We've just been kind of putting it off for a little bit. We've been doing more topics, but I'm glad that we could get after this.
Send this to both parties.
Yeah, Yep. Yep. Indeed. We will.
See who emails me back with a request for campaign funds sooner.
We'll see. So, all right, my friend, as always, until next time, we'll see you.